and welcome to the Oxygen Addict podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform at your best with 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel with the code OA23 at precisionfuelandhydration.com. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and happy Christmas. I hope you're all having a fantastic Christmas time, either with your families or whoever you're with. This week, I am putting out a special edition of the podcast to celebrate the Christmas week. So every week, we bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you. But this one, hopefully, is going to be even more motivating and inspiring than others. This is a replay of an old episode I found from the archives with Lucy Charles Barkley. This is from back in late 2019 when Lucy had just finished second at Kona. So I thought it'd be a really great way to get an old archived show. I think a lot of these you can't get anymore through the traditional podcast players. You can still find them on the old website. But I hope that you really enjoy listening to this. And if you do, there's a couple of things you could do for us, please. If you like this episode, you can please follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you can like and subscribe on YouTube. And if you're looking for help or advice with your training, please get in touch. You can email us at help@oxygenaddict.com. I think with Team Oxygen Addicts, we've got the best all-round solution for Ironman and triathlon coaching for busy age groupers. So please get in touch if you'd like a chat. So before we go into this interview with Lucy Charles Barkley, I want to give a shout out to our long-term sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. These guys have been with us almost from the very first year of the show. I first met Andy in early 2015, I think. So they've been with us pretty much from year one of the show. They're a fantastic bunch of people, and they've got a great product that solves a real genuine problem that most triathletes have. And that is that you can't stay hydrated just by drinking fluid alone. You lose a lot of electrolytes in your sweat, and you have to replace those electrolytes because they're what your body uses to monitor essentially the levels of hydration in your body. So if you're just replacing water, it's not solving that problem of dehydration like you think it's going to. So here's what you can do. You can go to precisionfuelandhydration.com, use the free fuel and hydration planning tool on the website, and that will give you a really good indicator of the amount of electrolytes that you need for your body size and for the amount and the concentration of your sweat, the amount of carbs you need to take in to fuel your exercise, and the amount of fluid to fuel the exercise. Because all this changes with body size, shape, the event you're racing, the different conditions, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, training indoors, outdoors. So there's loads of information on their website. And don't forget, you can book a free one-to-one video consultation with PFNH's athlete support team, and they'll be happy to help you nail your race nutrition plan. So listen, I hope that this podcast finds you out and about this Christmas. I hope you're out for a ride or out for a run or out for a walk. And I really hope you enjoy listening. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff in this interview that's out of date by necessity because it's from 2019. But it's really great to hear a story from the past, I think, like this, and to hear Lucy as she was then in 2019, having just finished second in Kona. And then fast forward to now to her being the Ironman world champion. So I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to get her back on the show in the near future to hear all about her actually winning Kona. But until then, until we can make that happen, here's our interview with Lucy Charles Barkley from back in 2019.
Hey, Rob. Yeah, it's really good to be back on. It seems like absolutely ages. Have a good catch up with you.
Yeah, I was looking back, it was December of 17, the last time we managed to get you on. So there's a lot to chat about since then.
Yeah, a lot has happened. It's been a crazy journey even since then. So, and time has absolutely flown. I can't actually believe it's been that long. So, it's been good.
Sure, it must have gone crazy for you. Well, listen, let's set the scene a little bit. The first time you came across our radar, I was down at Ironman UK. I was in the press tent, and there were all these very serious-looking mid-40s men coming across the line, collapsing and rolling around in agony. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you bounce through with your hair tied back in bunches and with a big smile on your face. And everyone's like, who's that? And how does she look so fresh still? And then you fast forward sort of 4 or 5 years, and here you are with three, obviously, second places at the Ironman World Championships, multiple wins at Ironman, God knows what else going on. So you showed the promise from the very early age. what I want to get today is the idea of the story of what's happened over these last couple of years for you, and how life is different from, you know, we followed you from just trying out Ironman to getting very good and turning pro very quickly to now, obviously, you're one of the, if not the most established names in the sport. And it does all happen in a very quick space of time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, back in sort of 2014, 2015, I was doing my first Ironmans, like you said, Ironman UK in Bolton, and just going, well, initially to go and just finish and say I've done an Ironman, and then getting hooked on it, coming back and wanting to win my age group and qualify for Kona, and then going on to win my age group at Kona. It's been a whirlwind of a journey, and it looks like it's kind of been an easy journey, I guess, from the outside. A lot of people just think it's kind of happened, but I can promise you it's been a lot of hard work. And I definitely have had a boost from my swim fitness, growing up being a good level swimmer, and then taking that into Ironman's definitely helped. But yeah, there's definitely been struggles along the way. There's been injuries to deal with, and kind of increasing pressure as the level of your competition gets higher, and obviously you've got sponsors to please. And always the biggest pressure definitely still comes from myself, because I've always been a born competitor and I just want to win races because I enjoy winning. So I still think the biggest pressure always comes from myself, and the kind of pressure and ambition I have to do well is always in there. But ultimately, even since the beginning, my key thing coming into triathlon was to have fun, because swimming had kind of got to the point where it wasn't fun anymore, and going training was a real chore, and the early mornings took their toll. And even when I was still competing well as a swimmer, I just wasn't getting that buzz anymore. So that was really why I did come into triathlon, because I just wanted to have that love of sport again. And I stand by that now, even competing at the highest level. I'm really trying to keep it fun. Even when I'm training day in, day out, we always have an element of fun in our sessions, just to keep it exciting and to keep us going, because ultimately I think that's what will lead to a long and successful career in the sport. So all going well so far, definitely.
Well, one of the things that really came across, you know, right at that very first race in the UK was, it was how much it looked like you were enjoying doing it. And, you know, you were kind of dancing around in the area at the finish line. And it was obvious. I mean, you said to us at the time, this is just the best sport ever. I'm having so much enjoyment doing it. It looks like that has somehow managed to carry on all the way through your 5 years so far of your, or your 4 years of your pro career so far. And that passion for the different kinds of training that you're doing really comes across in, you know, all the YouTube videos that you make and your Instagram and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely, like I said, we are just trying to enjoy what we're doing. And I kind of stand by, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then what's the point in doing it? And I absolutely love my job. I feel like I definitely have the best job there is. And yeah, of course, there's times where it's really hard and you're really tired and the alarm goes off at 4:45 in the morning to go swim training, and it's tough. But actually, if you have got that real love of the sport, then you can continue to do it. And yeah, we are just trying to have as much fun as possible whilst trying to compete at the highest level.
Now, you say we a lot, and I really like this. Obviously, you're coached by your husband, Reese, who was your fiance when we met you originally. One thing I've been wondering is, again, you said before, it looks like a kind of ideal situation from the outside, but I'm sure that competing at the very highest level and being coached to compete at the highest level, Reese must have to make you do some sessions really very unpleasant. So is there other times when it's tough? Is it difficult to have to wear sort of different hats between the relationship and the coach-athlete relationship?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting dynamic, and I'm sure there's probably a lot of couples that think, how the hell do you guys do that? I mean, we met as swimmers, but we were always in quite a high pressure sporting environment. And I think even from quite early on, Reese was someone that I looked up to as kind of a mentor for me, to like advise me on what I should do and maybe how I should approach different races. So he's always kind of had that slight coaching role for me anyway. And then we went on to set up our own business. So we were business partners as well and doing personal training together. And then we decided to jump onto this triathlon journey together. So whatever we've been doing it together. And most of the time we literally are tied at the hip. I think we've been together nearly 9 years now. And probably in the space of that time, we've spent less than probably 2 months apart across that time. So we do spend a hell of a lot of time together. And yeah, of course, there's times when we're debating what sessions we should do. And I mean, a prime example was probably about 4 weeks out from Kona, Reese had set me this absolutely disgusting run session, to which Reese, I think he had done his final race of the year. So he was kind of on a little bit of a break, but he was trying to stay at his fitness level so he could do these last few sessions with me to really help me along and give me that extra boost. And it was a really long run session that I had to do. And I felt like Reese was running quite well. And then we had these two blocks of about 8K that were the main part of the long run where I had to hit quite a fast pace. And so we set off on the first one and Reese shot off and I just had a bit of a strop, really. I was like, I can't keep up with that. That this is ridiculous. So to which Reese stopped and was like, are you going to do this session or not? And I was like, no, I think it's too hard. So he was like, well, just go home then if you're not going to do it. And well, that kind of fired me up a little bit, I guess. I got a bit annoyed, to which I went on to just absolutely smash this session and Reese couldn't keep up with me. So he was just like, see, I told you you could do it. And often that happens quite a lot where I think he set me sessions that maybe are a little bit too ambitious, but actually he knows I can do it. I've just got to find that place and go to it to be able to do the session. So yeah, it definitely is an interesting dynamic. And he really does get me doing some sessions that I don't think I'm capable of, and then somehow he manages to make me do it. So it's definitely working. I mean, the results kind of speak for themselves to say that what we're doing together is working. But yeah, there's times where it is really, really hard. Most of the time we work really well together and we kind of bounce off each other. But there's definitely days where maybe one of us or even both of us are so, so tired that we can get a bit grumpy. But I think that's only normal. So yeah.
Do you think he does that deliberately sometimes, kind of to get you fired up?
Yeah, I often feel like one of the key things that works in our program is that I never get comfortable. So I never really get to repeat the session at the same intensity I did before. We're always stepping it up a little bit, which gets quite annoying as an athlete, because you're like, oh, but I feel like it should be easy this week, but it never is, because we're always pushing on that little bit more, and he's very good at doing that. But I never get to enjoy the luxury of thinking, oh yeah, this is easy, and it's easier than last week, because we're always trying to push it on a bit. So but it works.
And do you think that has a knock on onto race day, when you've done so many sessions where you've started out not feeling that you're capable of doing them? Does that have an effect on your race day when you've got all those in the bag?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the key things people say is that how do you pull yourself out of dark spots in a race, and how do you keep your head strong in a race that long? And a lot of the time it is recalling on those sessions where when I started out the session, I didn't think I could do it, or I knew it was going to be really tough, and I've managed to do it. And that's often the kind of session that I'll look back on in a race. And normally leading into a race, I'll probably write down like my key five sessions that were really tough and I managed to do, and reflect on those during the race when I'm in one of those dark points. And it kind of reminds me that I can do it. And there's also sessions where it might be quite extreme, and it's actually less about the physical toll, but more about mentally the toll that it has, and giving yourself the confidence that, you know what, you can do this. It's maybe a little bit unnecessary, but it's going to give you that mental edge in the race. So it's a lot about physical training, but it's also a lot about the mental training as well.
Now, let me ask you about your year of racing this year then. You've had a pretty stellar year, I think, by anybody's standards, haven't you? You had the win at South Africa, you had the win at Roth, and then you had the sort of the 70.3, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and then Kona. So first up, I wanted to ask you, sort of with the race that you've had at South Africa and Roth, where you're out on your own, and usually your races, you're out on your own right from the gun, aren't you, right from the swim. Do you have to be quite sort of self-driven all the way through these races without anyone sort of around you to race for most of the year?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, you're definitely within your own head. And I think coming from a swimming background, being a distance swimmer, a lot of the time, a lot of training and racing was just in my own head. So I think that's definitely helped, having that ability to just be out front racing on your own. And you're not always aware of what the gaps are behind you. So you're just trying to keep pushing because you just don't know really if you're growing the gap or if it's closing. So I'm always trying to judge that effort myself. I quite like it in a way. I do like being out front in the driving seat and applying the pressure. I've had like a few different races this year, like even actually South Africa at the beginning of the year, because we had a shortened swim. I just didn't get that normal lead I'd have on the swim. And where I'd had actually a really big break over the winter, my biking just wasn't where it could be. So I actually ended up getting caught on the bike. But that was actually quite nice in a way, because I had a bit of company. So there was a lot more going on, and the bike leg actually went a bit quicker because I had other girls to like kind of see where they were and try and get back in front. And then it made it more exciting, and then went on to have probably one of my best runs, which kind of showed that the winter I'd focused more on my run than anything else. So that was really good. And then the Challenge Championship actually in Slovakia was one of my favorite races this year, because I managed to win it for the third time. And every time I've done that race, I've won it slightly differently. But this year was kind of my more typical style of racing, just out from the front and trying to hold off the gap. So that's definitely how I like to race. But I don't mind when things change, because it gives me something else to kind of learn. Every race I do, I definitely learn something new, and I feel like I'm still learning, which is really good. But yeah, I feel like I've probably had my best season this year. And it was kind of almost a bit of disappointment not to win Kona, but then I would still say that was probably one of my best ever performances, so I can't be disappointed. It has been a really good year.
Well, let's talk about Kona a little bit then, because I mean, what an epic battle you had at the end of that race. It was one of the only years where I've stayed up and just been gripped by it right to the very, very finish. For people who haven't seen it, let's talk them through the race. So you let out the swim, I want to say as per usual, but that's not to kind of like gloss over the fact that you've obliterated everybody on the swim. Out onto the bike again, you rode really, really strongly again, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was definitely my best bike performance today. I kind of, my whole game plan was based on how Daniela Reef has caught me the 2 years previously. So I knew I wanted to back end that ride, and literally the last hour just went super hard, but felt really, really good. But unfortunately, that just took its toll on my run. From the kind of sessions I'd been doing in my training, the time that I thought I could run, I just was way off of that. So the good thing is, I feel like I still have not anywhere near shown my run potential, which is nice. But yeah, I led that race for 7.5 hours, and then eventually got passed in the energy lab by Annie Haug. And the thing was, I was getting splits and I was just hearing how much the gap was coming down, and she was just tearing up that run course. And I think obviously if I'd had the run I could have had, I reckon it would have been me and Annie Haug basically sprinting in the last kilometres together, trying to get that win, which would have been really exciting. But I ended up having a battle with Sarah Crowley. I think I probably had maybe 5 or 6K to go, and Sarah Crowley passed me. And there is this amazing picture from Steph Hansen from Wits Up where my face just says it all. It's just like, oh God, no, like this is not what I wanted to happen, dropping back into third place. And kind of in that moment, I knew I was obviously suffering, but everyone is suffering at that point. So I was like, let's just keep Sarah in your sights. Let's not let her get too far away, because we'll see what happens. And then I reckon I probably had less than 3 kilometers to go, and Reese was actually out on the Queen K, and he was like, Lucy, she's suffering, like come on, you've got to dig deep now, let's see what you can do. And I kind of was the gap, I was closing it back down, and I could see that Sarah was struggling in front. And we kind of hit, with less than maybe 2 kilometers to go, you hit a slight rise on the Queen K before you drop down Polani. So it was actually on that rise that I made my move and just went all in, basically. Didn't look back, because I just didn't dare look back, basically. And for those who don't know, actually, basically, as soon as I hit T2 in Kona, I started to get cramp in my legs. So my calves cramped putting my trainers on. And then running out of the transition up Pilani, my quads started to cramp. So it pretty much was a marathon of dealing with cramp in my legs and trying to manage my nutrition to stop that escalating. But by the last 10K, it was like everything was just cramping and going. So my biggest nightmare when I overtook Sarah was that when we were running back down Pilani, my quads were just going to go, because I'm sure downhill is way worse. So it just feels like it's way worse. So, yeah, I just had to ignore everything in my body and just go all in to finish. And it was quite funny because Reece was obviously out in the Queen K with less than 3 kilometres to go. So he didn't really know what was going on. He'd seen me in third, and then he was basically sprinting back to try and get back to the finish before me. So he didn't really know what was going on. And then when I finished in second, he just couldn't believe it. He was like, I can't actually believe you managed to pull that back. So yeah, that was really good. But honestly, I finished that race and I barely even knew where I was. I remember doing an interview with Mike Riley on the finish line, and I could hear that my words were slurring. Like, I just had no control over what I was saying. So God knows what I said. I haven't actually watched that back. I could have said anything. And then did obviously the podium, the champagne, and then I was just straight in the medical tent. And after a few hours in there, I was fine. But I had definitely laid everything on the line, which for me was... I've had actually a lot of comments from people going, well, how can you be happy with second? If you're happy with second, then you're never going to win the race. And it's like, yes, but I know on that day I couldn't have given any more. So what more could I do? Like, I'm over the moon with what I did and the performance I laid down. And obviously the result I wanted was to get the win. But when you've done everything you can, you just cannot be disappointed. So, it was a great day. It was a great race, and it was a good way to sort of finish off a good year, really.
I can't believe anybody would say that to you after watching you battle your way back. I watched the video again in preparation for the interview, and actually, because I'm such a geek, I wrote down the timing. Sarah passed you with 8 hours 14 on the clock, and you passed her back with 8 hours 35 on the clock. So you were 10 minutes from the finish line when you passed her back. So how far ahead did she get in that 20-minute section? Did you manage to hold her to a relatively... like close enough to see, or can you not really remember?
Yeah, there was never a point where I couldn't see her. I could always see her. I mean, obviously it's a straight road, the Queen K, so it's hard to judge. And I always remember seeing her get to the aid station, and then she'd probably just left the aid station before I got there. So it probably never got to more than sort of 400, 500 metres. I just, tried to control that gap as best I could.
And can you remember what you were thinking as you realized that you were closing the gap on her?
I mean, I just thought, I don't want to drop off of this podium, really. And I didn't want to drop back a position. Having come second the last 2 years, my ultimate goal was to go up a position, definitely not go back one. So yeah. I was like, you've got to fight for this, because I mean, maybe most people would be happy just to get on the podium. But if you've been on the podium twice in seconds, it's kind of, you don't want to go back one. So, yeah, I was really just fighting to hold that second place and digging deep, ignoring every kind of pain in my body and just trying to hang on.
What do you plan to do differently in future with the whole, I mean, hydration is, it's such a challenging part, isn't it, when you're out in Kona and it's so hot and humid all the time. And I know in the past you've trained in heat and humidity inside those heat chambers and stuff. Have you got a plan going forward to try and address those cramps?
I think the biggest thing this year was, and I would say, like, it is nigh on impossible to match your sweat rate with the intensity that we're trying to race in those conditions, sort of as the top level athletes. But the thing that I kind of didn't really do was, I hadn't really, although my strategy on the bike was to go quite hard and then really push the back end, I probably hadn't really practiced it enough in training, that kind of style of racing. So I'd done sort of hard efforts throughout, but I'd never done, say, like a last hard hour on the bike. So maybe that's something I need to address. I mean, this year we focused more than ever on my nutrition strategy. We basically did like 6 hours on the indoor trainer in the heat, measuring my sweat rate every hour to make sure I was matching it. So we was really on board with that, and probably quite lucky we was, because of the cramp that did happen. I think if I hadn't have focused so much on the nutrition, then I could have completely fell apart. So yeah, we definitely did focus on that. We will continue to focus on that. I think we may even start a heat prep a lot earlier. We did do a good amount of heat prep like we do every year, but maybe we would start introducing that even earlier, just to get that stimulus in super early and get the adaptions going. The nutrition, I would say I almost did nail it, but actually when I got back and I was in the medical tent, they said I had lost nearly 2 kilos in body weight. So I was dehydrated. But it's just so difficult to match it in Kona. I mean, we're lucky as pros. We actually have the pro aid stations on the run, and that makes such a big difference, because you can plan your run nutrition to a T as well. And I think we have something like 6 or even more aid stations as pro athletes, where we've got our own drinks. So we're really making sure we know what we're getting. And as long as you drink all of that, which I pretty much did drink nearly all of that as well. So it's like, it's difficult to know how much more,
isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, this year I've had quite a few races where I've had really bad stomach issues as well. So I'm always that little bit nervous of kind of pushing it that little bit more and trying to take on board more and more. So Kona, luckily I had none of that, and I feel like we did get it right because I didn't have any of those kind of issues. But yeah, it's always, like I said, we are always learning, which is a great thing with this sport. I think with the three disciplines and racing that long, you do just continue to learn. So yeah, we will have another good look, and it's nice, we've got quite a while until Kona, so we've got plenty of time to address these things and really look at trying to finally get that win next year. I think that is obviously the goal. So yeah, it's exciting.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, and you've just alluded to that there with the 6 hour indoor rides. I'm sitting down watching the Tour de France this year, as I'm sure many of our listeners were. Every single advert pops up. Guess who's advertising Zwift on the TV? There you are on national TV all the time. How did that come about? And were you surprised that you ended up, like, I mean, you were literally everywhere all over the coverage, weren't you?
That was amazing. Yeah, it was so cool. I think it probably was after I raced in Samarin, I think, we did the filming for that in this little studio in London. And it was really cool. They basically said, oh, Jan Frodeno's just on set, you're going to go on next. So I was like, oh, this is cool. And I did some like biking on Zwift and some running on Zwift for this shoot. And I just remember being on the bike and they were like, right, we need you to really push it now, like show your pain face, make it look like you're really working really hard. And I look out into the crowd of people that are there, and Mo Farah's just there watching me on the bike. And I'm just like, oh my God, like this is crazy. but unfortunately, I didn't actually get to meet Mo because he'd gone into hair and makeup when I was leaving set. So I'm sure he didn't have to spend as long in hair and makeup as I did, but but yeah, that was really cool. And I wasn't completely sure where the ad was going to go. They said it might be during the Tour de France, so yeah, that was just really weird because we obviously love Tour de France as well, so we had it on the telly, and every now and again I'd be like, oh, there's me popping up again. So yeah, that was really, really cool. Yeah, and it's always great, the opportunities that come about from the different sponsors I have. So yeah, that was brilliant.
And then you've just had this video out with Red Bull, with them, I've only managed to see a little bit of it, but being taken to their headquarters and getting flown around and stuff. What was that all about?
Yeah, basically Red Bull is based in Austria. So as a Red Bull athlete, you get to go out and visit their headquarters. And they also have this really elite training facility for all the Red Bull athletes. So I hadn't actually yet been out there, and I've been a Red Bull athlete for about 3 years now. So they were like, we really want to get you out there and show you all of this. So we sort of said, well, the best time to go really is during my off season to suss it out. So we went out there. My sister actually now works for me doing all of my media stuff, and we're really trying to push YouTube at the moment. So we kind of asked, oh, do you think we'd be allowed to film around the headquarters and give people a bit of an insight into that? And Red Bull were all for it. So yeah, it was an amazing trip. They even gave us a helicopter tour so we could see the headquarters from above and just see the lakes in Austria, all the mountains. We were so lucky as well because it was just such an amazing day. So it was so clear, we could see it all. But yeah, that was really, really amazing of Red Bull to do that. And yeah, like I said, some of the opportunities that I get to do just by being a triathlete and having these amazing sponsors is like, I couldn't have imagined it when I started out. So yeah, it is really amazing.
And the last time we talked, I think you didn't even have a bike sponsor. Maybe it was the time before, but do you remember you were without a bike sponsor and now obviously you're on the Swanky New Specialized?
Yeah, I reckon when we last spoke, I was probably still on, I can't remember what frame I had. It might have been a Boardman frame, but I'd actually stuck stickers over it. So it said like lucychiles.com. So
that's right,
people
yeah.
knew that I didn't have a deal. And I think it probably wasn't long after we spoke because I signed with Specialized after I won Ironman Lanzarote or after I won the Challenge Championship in 2017. So my first race on the Specialized was when I did Frankfurt to qualify for Kona as a pro the first time. So yeah, it's been like an amazing journey. And kind of from looking back, and a lot of people, again, from the outside, it looks like it's super easy, but we were struggling so much to get sponsors in those early days. And even after winning a few races as a pro, it's still so difficult. You don't have people just ringing up the phone saying, oh, we want to sponsor you. It's always the other way around, where you're chasing to try and get brands to support you and kind of tell them, well, look, this is where I'm aiming to be. But until you've actually done it, they don't believe it. And I kind of feel like maybe I've proved quite a lot of brands wrong who I was trying to tell them what I was about and what I wanted to do in the early days. And maybe they might be kicking themselves now that they didn't sign a deal. So yeah.
Right, listen, one last thing I want to ask you about, because I am also a Volkswagen camper vanner. I'm loving the T6, the video you've produced with that, the new T6 that you've just got. It looks awesome.
Oh my god, it is absolutely amazing. So this came about by the triathlon show this year. A friend of mine was actually at the show and he saw this company called CJL Leisure Vans were actually there, and they were advertising that they wanted to partner with an athlete. And so I got in touch straight away, because literally my dad's dream car from growing up has been like the vintage VWs. So yeah, me and my sister have always loved camper vans, and sort of the dream is always to be able to get my dad one of the vintage ones one day. But yeah, so I kind of got in touch straight away. I didn't even have a car at the time, actually. So I was like, oh, it'd be great to just get four wheels, to be honest, to get about. So yeah, I contacted them, and it was quite a long process because they'd never actually done anything like it before. So I was just working with them to see how it could work. And it wasn't until after Kona this year, we actually took the trip down to Bristol and they were unveiling the van that they had done for us. And I had zero input into this. And honestly, I could not believe like the detail they'd gone to with kind of, they said they felt like they'd almost stalked me a little bit to get every detail to my personality. So even to the seats being kind of like my favorite colors and what my race suit is, and yeah, just loads of little details that I just couldn't actually believe they'd gone to all this effort. So me and my sister and mum and dad are going to go down to Cornwall next week, actually, in the van, and kind of get some content filming it, how I'm going to use it for my training. I might even be braving the sea next this week in my wetsuit, and yeah, just getting some footage of that. But yeah, it's really, really cool, and I think it will allow us to race a bit more in the UK, train a bit more in the UK, and just say, you know what, actually we fancy going up to the Lake District to train, let's just pack up the van and go. So and if we race somewhere like Roth again, we would just drive over with all the gear, make it a road trip. Awesome. Stop over. So yeah, it's allowing us to have a lot more opportunities. And I mean, me and Reece just love doing things like park runs, so we kind of would love to just go around the UK doing different park runs every weekend. So yeah, it's going to be a real sort of big opportunity for us and a bit of a lifestyle change, hopefully. I mean, there's no doubt we'll obviously still go off to Lanzarote to train if the weather's terrible here, but yeah, it's nice to know we can actually base ourselves around the UK and do a bit more at home.
Fantastic. All right, listen, final question then. What are your race plans for next year going forwards?
Oh, so next year, my race calendar is completely up in the air. There's a lot of things actually going on within the pro triathlon kind of circuit. I don't know if you've heard about the Collins Cup before. Yeah, yeah. It's been trying to be developed for a long time.
A few years now, hasn't it?
A lot of talk of it being next year. So until that's confirmed, my season is quite up in the air, and hopefully it's going to get confirmed soon, because it looks really, really exciting, actually, for a lot of the pro athletes. So if that goes ahead, my season will be kind of leading more towards that. I mean, obviously, next year, the ultimate goal will be Kona. So everything is leading towards that. I'll need to pick an Ironman to validate at. And at the moment, I'm still, my favourite Ironman really is Ironman South Africa, which is earlier than ever next year. I think it's at the end of March. So that is likely to be my validation race. So I can get that done early, and then I could look at these Collins Cup type races put on by the PTO, which is the Pro Triathlete Organisation. So, yeah, I'm kind of, at the moment, I have like an A, B and C plan for my season. There's also a chance that I may actually get to start in the elite race at London Marathon. So that could be really exciting.
Oh, wow.
And would mean I really will work on my running until then, because I don't want to get dropped in the first few Ks. So, so yeah, we'll see. I'm actually going to go and do a half marathon around December time, just to make sure I have my championship time, because I did not start at London Marathon in 2016 when I had a stress fracture. And then this year I had a DNF because I went into the race with a stomach bug, and I probably broke the record for the most port-a-loos used in like 8 miles.
You.
So yeah, I would like to go third time lucky and have a great run there. So that's definitely sort of one of my early season goals. And then, yeah, like I said, it will all just be leading towards Kona and trying to finally get that win there. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't give you a lot more detail because I actually don't know at the moment. So yeah, I'm sure it will. We'll be putting it out on YouTube once races are decided, just to keep everyone in the loop and all my fans knowing what I'm doing. So yeah, we'll let everyone know once we know, basically.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing those firmed up plans in the future then. But listen, Lucy, thank you so much for the time to come back on the show. Congratulations on that, like that incredibly gritty battle to win second place at Kona. It was one of the highlights of my year, watching you battle back to do that, because I think coming back to overtake somebody when you've been overtaken at the very highest level, especially in that heat and humidity, it's like a hats off to your moment. So look forward to seeing that sprint finish next year, maybe, hey?
I wouldn't mind. I always love a bit of excitement in my racing and delivering the excitement to everyone watching. So hopefully.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you very much. Great chatting to you, Rob. Take care.
Okay, I hope you really enjoyed that old interview with Lucy there. Here are some discount codes and deals for you to wrap up this week's show. At precisionfuelandhydration.com, you can use the code OA23 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And at teamoxygenaddict.com, I think we've got the most comprehensive endurance sports coaching program for busy age groupers. You can book a call with us to see if you'd be a good fit for joining the team, and let's see how we can best help you achieve your endurance event goals for the coming season. So remember, there's links in the show notes. You don't have to remember the things that I've said. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict podcast. Have a very happy Christmas. See ya.